Thinking Aloud from the University of Warwick. Hello and welcome to Thinking Aloud. I'm Stephen Bates, a PhD candidate in the History Department here at Warwick. And with me is Dr. Cesare Cutica, a research fellow at the University of Sussex. Dr. Cutica's main research interests focus on early modern political thought and the defence of divine right. Consequently, he's visiting Warwick today to give a paper on Sir Robert Filmer, the author of Patriarchia, the Natural Power of Kings, which is related to his current project, a monograph on patriarchalism in 17th century political thought. Dr. Cutica, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you very much, Stephen.
And can I ask you, what would you say is your favourite primary source?
Well, I suppose that my favourite primary source is a bulky treatise, somehow. Bulky because, why bulky? Well, bulky because everything which is bulky and cumbersome, perhaps, is challenging to the eye. And I'm fascinating, often what I like about the primary source, and especially the treatise, is the fact that it looks different. So somehow my interest for it starts even before I open the book. Its shape, its smell, frontispiece is different from what we can have in a secondary source. So in other terms, if somebody said that the past, rightly or wrong, the past is a foreign country, the primary source is very much a foreign holiday in that sense. Should you ask me why? Well, I would say because I'm fascinated by metaphor and images of the eye. So what do we see when we stare at something? And often I find that when we stare at a bulky treatise or so pamphlets or a manuscript, we see different things, and it takes a little while to readjust our mental eye and also our physical eye when confronted by it. And that is something which fascinates me. The letters are different. Sometimes we curse on somebody's handwriting. So I'm fascinated by the foreignness that a primary source can have, and the treatise often is very foreign because it's bulky.
Do you find that the bulkiness or the size is intimidating? Or
at times it is, of course, but at the same time I suppose that the kind of investigator-like approach enables you or is conducive to make you curious about how you can break that bulkiness and see what you can extrapolate from that strange object that you've got in front of you. The other thing with primary sources, which again, to underline again the foreignness of a primary source, is that we need to be a little bit like translators. That is to say, we approach the primary source a little bit as a foreign language, and yet we need to be able to pursue, to carry out that sort of mediation. It's a bit like being on a boat. Being on a boat can often be uncomfortable, but a boat ferries you across choppy water to safe shores, and that is a little bit what we do as translators of the past, exploring primary sources. We translate what we find in the primary source once we have decoded to a modern audience. The other, and then I conclude here, the other thing is that we also act as eavesdroppers when we look at the primary source. We eavesdrop something. Often it's not, we can't hear properly. It takes a little bit of time. At the beginning it's just noise or rumours in a way, gossip, and we eavesdrop, and then, so perhaps we are first eavesdroppers and then translators.
I suppose being a bigger document, that gives you more scope for interpretation and play.
To a certain extent, yes. I suppose there is also something very, very perhaps banal, but also in elementary behind the bulky treatise. Is why did the author engage in writing such a long piece, such a long narrative? And of course, yes, that sometimes opens up scope for fascinating and meandering and confusing and entrancing lines and trajectories of our research.
I suppose it makes you think about the audience that's intended in that as well.
Absolutely. I could also say something even perhaps more banal and simplistic, is that, you know, nowadays we live in an era where everything is so rapid, and from, you know, technological devices to our life and professional, you know, personal, you know, quotidian and professional pace, the treatise, the bulk of treatise, is the opposite of that. You need to step back, reflect. Whereas in the pamphlets, you have something punctual, almost instantaneous. So I suppose I'm old-fashioned in this sense.
So conversely, what would you say is your favourite secondary source? Is that a similarly weighty tone?
Secondary sources can be fascinating because they somehow, you know, you can relate more to them. Sometimes you know the person who wrote the book. Sometimes you even know them personally. So that person's got a physical appearance, got a face. The one I prefer, I often use like collections of essays if they are coherent, consistent as well. But also, you know, because they can conceal some eccentric thoughts, and which perhaps are unorthodox compared to the rest of the collection. So I quite like, you know, to see how people put together edited volumes.
Okay.
The other fascinating, according to me, type of secondary source is a long essay, which I suppose, due to, you know, the current editorial world climate, it's a genre which is in a way waning and disappearing. But I quite like the kind of Trevor Roper like type of historian, somebody who's a master of the pen, no less than master of the sources.
That's really interesting. Dr. Katiga, thank you very much for giving us your time today.
To you.
And thank you for listening to Thinking Aloud.